Today on the podcast, a mantelpiece moment that took me on a bushwalk, a novel that traps us, and of course, the weekly reveal to what magical book I have pulled down from my to-be-read shelf. All of that and more this week on A Novel Review. Hello and welcome to the literature podcast, A Novel Review. My name is Seamus, your host, and together we will discuss, dissect, and explore the wonderful world of literature. And the wonderful world of literature is a vast and dense jungle. So let's start making our way through, one book at a time. Hey guys, welcome back. Another day, another week, another episode. Same host. My name is Seamus. I am the host, and this is A Novel Review, a book podcast. And for today, we're going to be doing The Bell Jar by Sylvia Plath. But before I get into this book, I always take a moment to reflect on any mantelpiece moments, something to highlight from the week past. And though it may not look like it, I was recently in Australia for a quick little holiday. If you can't tell from my accent, I am Australian. So I was back there visiting friends and family, and while there, I went on a camping trip with my friends, and on one of the days we needed something to do, so we went on a bushwalk. And at one point, we just came across this sort of opening through this dense bushland. We came upon an opening, and there was a hut there, and it was a little bit unremarkable in that it was one room. The original hut had actually burnt down in the 2019-2020 bushfires, but they had rebuilt it exactly the same, but it was essentially just one room. There was a fireplace and a couple of windows and a nice little porch, little deck. So a little bit unremarkable, but the view was incredible. But the wonderful thing about this was it was actually owned by an Australian writer who had just taken it upon themselves to set up shop there right in the bush. This was the little writing retreat of an Australian author called Kathleen Kiley Tennant, who I had never heard of, to be completely honest, but it was incredibly cool to sort of stumble across this. Obviously, built in the days when you could just do that, you could just sort of hike into the bushland and build your house, which you just can't do now, which is probably a good thing because so many people would just take to the bush and corner off their pieces of land and build, cut down trees, which is what we don't want. But yeah, she was this writer who, she was very much what seems to be a method writer in that she'd live in lower socioeconomic communities to get a sense of what it was like. She at one point was researching prison life, so she went to prison to understand what it was like. And I've got just a little quote from her here. It's, you know, it's a very aware little comment, so I'll read it for you and you can get a taste of her writing style. And it reads, "In the busy city, dying might be resented as a breach of good taste, and the body hastily dispatched to the undertaker and the crematorium. But in Lost Haven, where a man's mates had to turn out and dig his grave, it was an occasion shared by the whole community." Yeah, very simple line, but very much, yeah, very aware. Sort of, yeah, you come to the big city for opportunity, but I guess you lose that sense of community, which is, yeah, one of the pitfalls, I guess, of living in a big city. And I think she's pretty much summed it up perfectly in that line. So yeah, lovely to just sort of stumble across this little hut. I wish I could just go to the bush and build a little riding retreat because that would be sick. A bit of housekeeping. If you would like and subscribe, that would be very much appreciated, but don't feel obliged. This is a free podcast. So yeah, just have fun. Okay, here we go. Sylvia Plath's The Bell Jar. I am a big fan of Sylvia Plath. Her poetry is simply incredible. But I guess the question is, how does she stack up as an author? Well, listen on and I will discuss it. I'll discuss it in depth in a bit. But I think for the minute, we just need a bit of an overview to set the tone for what The Bell Jar actually is. The Bell Jar, it follows the story of Esther Greenwood, a young woman in her early 20s who wins a prestigious internship at a New York City magazine. Despite her initial excitement, Esther finds herself increasingly disillusioned with the glamorous lifestyle and the societal pressures surrounding her. As she struggles with her ambitions and her expectations placed upon her as a woman in the 1950s, Esther begins to suffer and experience a deep sense of alienation and despair. Throughout the novel, Esther grapples with her own mental health issues, including depression and suicidal ideation. She undergoes a series of psychiatric treatments, including electroconvulsive therapy, but finds little relief from her inner turmoil. As her condition deteriorates, Esther becomes increasingly isolated from those around her, feeling trapped beneath a metaphorical bell jar that suffocates her spirit. Wow. To me, that just feels ironically alive. It feels electric, but it also feels really dark and brooding, you know, this sense of death looming in the background, in the blistering heat, the city heat, and that city is, it's New York. And already this reads as a very American novel, and I was loving it. And then, I don't know, page by page, chapter by chapter, it just kind of went a bit downhill for me. As I said, this novel reads as very American, and I'm sure we all know what I mean by that. But it felt very much a crossover between Salinger's The Catcher in the Rye, Joan Didion's Play It As It Lays, sort of cross with The Mayhem of New York in Jay McInerney's Bright Lights, Big City. Again, all books that I think are very, you know, quite typically American. That is, yeah, this is not a criticism. It's just sort of an observation. But I also don't like Catcher in the Rye because I think Holden is just a bit insufferable. And so I guess as soon as those similarities appeared and entered my mind, I did think it sort of tainted my reading a bit. But that being said, I think Plath also captured the hectic nature of New York and America in this time quite well, in a very similar way that Joan Didion does in Play It As It Lays. I know they're, you know, different cities. I know Joan Didion's Play It As It Lays take place in Hollywood and other places, but I think it's this sort of frantic, sparse, almost fleeting sentence structure that captures this, and that's what I love about it. The beginning is a great place to start, and I'm going to read the opening paragraph to start because this is what really hooked me into the story. So the opening line goes, "It was a queer, sultry summer, the summer they electrocuted the Rosenbergs, and I didn't know what I was doing in New York." Now that to me is just quite eerie, really. It's incredibly aimless, it's empty, and it's sort of lost within itself. And yet it's also incredibly direct. It establishes that it's summertime in New York, and because it says the year they electrocuted the Rosenbergs, thanks to a quick Google search, because I didn't know this, but it actually establishes a year of 1953. So even though it's incredibly sparse and empty, it's actually packed with information that offers the reader a lot more information than they might initially realize. And so you can really see the poetics at work here by Sylvia. It's also quite a dark opening line, especially when you consider that Sylvia committed suicide not long after the release of this book, and I think that does add a heightened approach to reading of this particular book, because so many of the lines and ideas can be read under the light of someone that's truly suffering. And that is actually something that I think removed me from the story, because it was this incredibly suffocating read. Esther is suffocated in her life, and that sort of starts her descent down this dark path. But I also felt quite suffocated from the story, quite alienated from the story itself. I don't know why, because I'm usually a sucker for a good mental sort of exploration and decline, because I think it's quite a fascinating idea and topic. I think it's incredibly fascinating to watch the intricacies of the human mind at work. And yet, I don't know what sort of removed me from this book. I just kind of struggled to stay connected with Esther through her decline and as the story progressed as a whole. But even though I felt quite removed from the text, there were aspects that I still felt very connected with in a different way and really enjoyed that. The story felt devoid of any form of sort of romantic connotations towards mental health. It's this incredibly dark and bleak novel, and I think that is quite reflective of the truth of mental illness. And I think Plath presents Esther's descent into madness with a sort of raw honesty, capturing this sort of, yeah, really tumultuous highs and lows of her emotional landscape. I think one aspect that I really actually quite enjoyed is the metaphorical bell jar, which of course is where the book gets its title. And it's this idea of a bell jar that has descended upon her, sort of symbolizing this stifling constraints of society and the oppressive weight of her own sort of psyche, I guess. It's sort of being trapped beneath this metaphorical glass dome that Esther finds herself unable to breathe, you know, suffocated by the conflicting demands of conformity and self-expression. Plath's evocative portrayal of the bell jar serves as this incredibly powerful allegory to the isolation and confinement experienced by those grappling with mental illnesses, highlighting this kind of like pervasive nature of societal stigma and I think struggle for liberation, because I think it would feel like that, a glass dome. You know, you can see the top, you can see outside, and yet there is this thing that surrounds you that sort of holds you and traps you. You can see the world, you can see all that is going on, how it should be, and yet you are trapped by this thing, this bell jar, this glass bell jar that's ultimately invisible. But I mean, it's physical in that you can tap glass, but it's technically invisible because you can't see it. And so that's what I imagine it would be like, is sort of, yeah, just being able to observe the world, but also feeling completely separated from it by something that other people can't see. As much as you can't see, you can only sort of feel it. And yeah, it's being trapped in this world that kind of defines you. Time for another quote to celebrate this beautiful and poetic nature of Sylvia's writing. That's never a question, that's always a yes. So yeah, here we go. There is something demoralizing about watching two people get more and more crazy about each other, especially when you are the only extra person in the room. It's like watching Paris from an express caboose heading in the opposite direction. Every second the city gets smaller and smaller, only you feel it's really getting smaller and smaller and lonelier, rushing away from all those lights and excitement at about a million miles an hour. I mean, the writing alone for a poet is pretty incredible. The thematic nature of the story is dark and brooding, very much marked by Sylvia's own suicide. I still didn't love it, so I think I'm going to rate this book a 3.5 out of 5. So what was I reading this week? This week I was reading, it's actually two books in one, which is kind of sneaky. It's by Canadian author Nora Gold. So the first one is In Sickness and in Health, and it's a book about a woman with a mystery illness that affects her sort of 1 week roughly out of every month, and the doctors don't know what it is, and it's sort of, you don't spend a lot of time with her, you spend sort of 1 week with her as she progresses through this illness. And it's a novella, it's only about 104 pages I think, and the really fun thing about this particular book is you flip it and get book number two, Yom Kippur in a Gym, which is, Yom Kippur is a Jewish holiday, and it's taking place in a gym this year in Toronto, I think it was Toronto. And it follows the lives of five different people through the celebration of Yom Kippur, and it's this incredibly, well, both of them are incredibly fun. They're both very different books. I'm going to do an episode on them, so don't worry. In fact, I'm not going to reveal too much, but they're both very different reads, which was actually quite nice. Had a lot of fun reading both of them. I just finished it this morning. So yeah, I'm definitely going to do an episode on them soon, which will be fun because, yeah, you get the old reversible book and two for the price of one. Brilliant. Now, before I close out the show, if you have listened this far, please consider hitting those 5 stars. I would really appreciate it. Also, feel free to head along to the website and support the pod. But as always, thank you, thank you, thank you for your attention. So I think it's time to end this episode. And today, to take us away, I think another quote from Kylie Tennant. And she writes, "Life was a fool's errand, carrying news to the worms."